Support for Midwest Swing is brought to you by baseball.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
What's up, everybody? We are back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network and at Midwest Swing Pod on Twitter. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And we're coming at you one day in advance of the big league opening day festivities. And we're getting awfully excited about that. Twins opening on the East Coast against the Baltimore Orioles. It'll be Jake Odorizzi on the bump at Orioles Park at Camden Yards tomorrow afternoon against Dylan Bundy. Also out on the East Coast right now, though, is the Twins AAA club, the Rochester Red Wings, who have some very interesting faces, some very familiar faces, and someone who's familiar with all of those faces is my good friend Nate Rowan. And Nate, I suspect you wear quite a few hats for the ball club, but what is your formal title?
I'm formally the Director of Communications, I guess. Brandon, thanks for having me on. But Director of Communications, which encapsulates a lot of different things here at the ballpark.
So when I used to talk to guys who worked for the St. Paul Saints, guys who were like the assistant GM or GM, they also took tickets and all kinds of stuff. How many different roles do you take on in your job? Is it a little bit more formal, a little bit more obvious what you do, or are there still some things you do behind the scenes that people might not know about?
Well, I think in the minor leagues and either independent leagues or even in affiliated ball, I think everybody kind of has to pull their weight in regards to sales, whether that be ticket sales, advertising, whatever it may be. But, you know, that's not my main responsibility. Obviously, the more that I can sell, the better off the ball club is. But my main responsibility, especially once we get past the new year and we get into January and February and the season approaches, is to get a media guide done and player-related information is my primary responsibility. I can tell you that yesterday we put the tarp on the field for the first time this year.
I saw that.
And we don't have, you know, a full-time grounds crew. And so that's people from the front office. That's ticket sellers. That's people that work in group sales. Really all hands on deck when it comes to putting the tarp on. So we do a lot of different things. I guess my main responsibility, especially once the season starts, are more player-related things. But I kind of help out when I can with what I can, depending on kind of what's going on with the team.
So how involved is your off season? Because obviously it sounds like after the new year, that media guide is probably a lot of preparation, but are you just as busy when the Wings aren't playing as when they are, or do you get a little bit of a respite?
I get a little bit of a rest.
I know that Josh Wetzel does Buffalo basketball games, so he must have at least some time away from what he's doing. And I know you guys do different things, but do you have the same level of time away, or are you doing different sorts of things?
So what I would say is that my weekly hourly total ends up at about 40 during the off season. Mm-hmm. Our front office does a nice job. General manager Dan Mason here is great. Naomi Silver, the president here, is great, and they let us out a little bit early the first couple months of the off season, about an hour early every day. So I'm working probably 35 to 40 hours a week, whereas during the season it's quite a bit more. And they give us the flexibility to kind of do what we want to do. I, for example, like to be busy. I'm used to being busy during the season, so when I do have a lot of free time, I actually have a hard time trying to figure out how to fill that time. So I work doing high school football coverage around town here with one of the local TV stations, and then when hockey season starts in the winter, I help out the Rochester Institute of Technology, which is a Division I team, and I do stats for their TV broadcast. So I try to stay busy with what I can when I can, but it doesn't require me necessarily to be out of the office, I guess. These are things that would happen after my 9 to 5, I guess you would call it, ends for the day on Fridays.
So you mentioned the minor league GM or AAA GM. What role does that person play in player collection or player acquisitions? Because obviously Thad Levine and Derek Falvey deal with 40-man stuff, but let's just say you sign someone that's a non-40 that you need just to fill out your roster because you don't want to bring someone up from Chattanooga. Is that more of what is it, you say Dan Mason?
Right. Yep.
Would he be more involved with that, or how is he involved with that whole player acquisition process at AAA?
Very little, actually, believe it or not. Baseball has a little bit different rules. Like, for example, in hockey, the AAA equivalent, I guess, would be the AHL. And so teams can specifically sign guys, for example, for a tryout, or the team actually pays a player's salary or whatever. So mm-hmm. In baseball, you can't really do that. So the Twins actually have to employ a player in order for them to play with us. So even if it's only for 2 weeks at the end of a season to get to the end of a campaign or something like that, the Twins have to be the ones who the player's under contract with. Other sports have different rules. Like, for example, anybody who watched the Olympics knows that Brian Gianta captained the team. Mm-hmm. Well, he's from Rochester, and so he was training here with the AHL team in town, and that team actually signed him to a one-game contract. And so they paid him one game before he went over to South Korea, to play in the Olympics. Baseball would not be able to do that.
Right.
The teams really don't have a say as far as minor leagues go, but they do check in with us, just guys that have come through the league, guys that we've seen. Hey, we're thinking about signing this guy. What have you heard about him? That sort of stuff.
Sure.
But he really doesn't have any say, although I think they do value his opinion quite a bit.
Well, they do need eyes on Rochester at times, just because, like, when Terry Ryan was with the club, you know, he can't be in all these affiliates at the same time and still have his eyes on the big league
sure.
team. So I'm sure. So was he hired by someone from the Twins, you know, so it's at least a Twins picked person, or is that a person picked by the Silvers? Who was kind of making those decisions?
Yeah, the Silvers are the ones who determine who the general manager is here.
Okay.
Dan has been in that role since the early 90s.
So pre-Twins,
right.
Were
right.
they the Orioles back then?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
So believe it or not, Red Wings have only had three affiliated major league clubs in their
wow.
entire existence. Back in the late 1920s, when minor league teams kind of became a thing, the Cardinals were one of the first teams to kind of come up with that idea of having kind of a feeder system to St. Louis. And so the Red Wings, the team name is based on the Cardinal nickname in St. Louis.
Oh, that makes sense.
Red Wings on the bird.
Shirts.
And so,
yeah.
So they were affiliated. We were affiliated with the Cardinals until 1960, 1961, the Orioles came in, and we were affiliated with Baltimore until 2002. And then the Twins came in since 2003. So really, for as long as the team has been around, to only have three parent clubs is pretty remarkable, especially given how often teams change at the lower levels. But yeah, it actually helps with stability when you're with the same team. I think you develop relationship with people. The Twins, especially under the Terry Ryan regime, had good relationships with everybody here.
Right.
Even with, you know, our broadcaster Josh, who does a great job. You know, they would ask him what they thought on players on other teams, for example, if they were looking for 6-year free agents and that sort of thing. So,
yeah.
I think things are off to a good start with Derek and Thad. Just given the schedule last year, Thad was not able to get here. Derek made it here towards the end of the season, and we'll see when Jeremy, the new farm director, gets into town. But it sounds like he's going to try to come in a couple times and start building those relationships, which can only help both sides, really.
It's going to be weird to have a farm director younger than me. Maybe younger than you too. I'm 30.
Younger than me.
Yeah.
Younger
so,
than me.
Another weird thing about that was he was with the Dodgers, and I kind of wonder if Gabe Kapler had left for the Phillies already, if maybe that Jeremy Zoll would have gotten the job in L.A., but the Twins kind of sprung on it then. I don't know if that was going to be the case if he was the next guy in line, but that's not a bad organization to be stealing talent from. I kind of thought that last offseason, Pickler coming from the Dodgers and Rousen coming from the Cubs and the Yankees, when you're taking talent from teams that have put out those type of hitters, as far as Rousen, and then as far as like player development from the Dodgers, I'm not sure that it's necessarily the best way to assess the moves you make or the talent you get from a front office or coaching standpoint. But you got to feel pretty good about, you know, pillaging the Dodgers' cupboards, so to speak, for player development talent, don't you think?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that, you know, as much as people want to talk about how much the Twins improved this offseason on the field between the lines, they made a lot of good acquisitions to their front office. They have so many more employees now in different departments, I guess, baseball operations mm-hmm. most notably. But within, there's some new analytics guys, and there's some guys that are building baseball systems, and there's some guys helping with player development, and there's guys, you know, in various roles that I think will ultimately help the organization as a whole, but people may not see necessarily because they're not the Logan Morrison, they're not the Jake Odorizzi, they're right. not the, you know, the Addison Reed. Those type of acquisitions are obviously noticeable to the fans, but the stuff behind the scenes is almost as important. I think that the Twins have tried to jump on, like, they've added like a nutritionist, and they've added a mental health person and a team psychologist, I think. And, you know, those types of things go a long way. And I think that there are teams that adapt to those, the changing game quicker than others. But I think that but those moves are almost as important as what they made on the field, because at the end of the day, Derek and Thad have said that they want to build for long term success. And so you can't, you know, that's not going to come just by signing major league free agents 1 year at a time. So right. the stuff that happens in the minor leagues is really important. And I think they see that, and we'll have to see how things go. But I like the direction that the organization is heading.
So if people are wondering how you and I have kind of struck up a friendship, you are a Minnesota native actually from the start, and then have worked in baseball now for a handful of years. I know you were with the Royals for a spell before the Red Wings came calling, and you also did some stuff for the Twins. Was that as an intern?
You're right. I was a radio intern, yep.
So you worked with Chris Atterbury and all those guys as a...
Correct. Corey Pro was his first year, actually.
He's tremendous, by the way. I think Corey does a great job. I would say that to his face. I'm not one of those people that wouldn't say it to his face. He does a tremendous job, and it's obviously tough filling the shoes of John Gordon, who was an icon here all the way back to the little big league days. Actually,
I really think, and I'm not just saying this because I interned for him, because I have no, I guess there's no obligation for me to say this. I'm just saying it because I honestly believe it. Mm-hmm. The Twins radio broadcast is one of, if not the best, from pregame start till the postgame end, one of the best broadcasts around. I think they do a great job pre and post with content. Mm-hmm. Chris Atterbury is obviously the voice of the pre and the post game, and also helps out when Corey and Dan Gladden are needing some time off. But, you know, Mark Janoski, the producer there, they put in a lot of work. Andrew Halverson, there's other people behind the scenes as well. And then yeah. Kyle Hammer, the engineer. I mean, really, they do a heck of a job. For what such a few amount of people that put in such great amount of work, they rely on interns. Like when I was there, I mean, I was in there gathering content for the shows. It wasn't yep. like I was just in the back hiding and not, we were expected to do real work, and they take a lot of pride in it. And I think it, just listening to a lot of different teams around, it's one of, if not the best, total package broadcasts in the game.
You got to love, though, when internships give you practical experience instead of getting coffee and handing out T-shirts. So you have to respect that for sure. What was your Royals experience like? Because you were with them the year they got to the World Series and lost, if I'm not mistaken. Was that 2014?
Right, 2014. So I'll give a brief rundown. I was in independent ball in 2010. I had to do it for college credit. I was with the Kansas City T-Bones. 2012, I interned with the Twins. 13, I was in Norfolk, Virginia with the Orioles AAA team as an intern. Mm-hmm. And then Arizona Fall League stops both those off seasons. And
I
then
mean,
the Royals
fun.
And it's a blast. If anyone is thinking about it and they've never gone out there, I would recommend going for mm-hmm. a week or two.
Yeah.
It's really, really fun. There's not a lot of fans there, and you get to see a lot of talent on the field at one time. But then 14 was with the Royals, and then that led to a full-time job out here in Rochester, the first full-time job I've ever had. So But 14 was great because, you know, you go down to Kansas City and they had a good season the year before. And I had visited Kauffman Stadium quite a bit, still one of my favorite major league ballparks. I think when they renovated to allow people to walk all the way around the stadium in center field, it used to be fenced off and they didn't have as much stuff as they have out there now. But, you know, I had visited down there, but when I got down there, you know, they were coming off a good season. I think they thought they were going to be good and they got to about the All-Star break and things hadn't really turned out. And then
Dave Cameron wrote a time to break it down column.
Yeah. It was either right out of the All-Star break or I'm mistaking the dates, but they played Seattle at home for a 3-game set and they got swept by the Mariners, and it went from like, this season's going to be, you know, got a real chance to be special to, all right, do they start trading guys?
Like Shields, because everyone wanted them to trade Shields, is what Cameron said.
Right. So they started talking about that stuff, and Dayton Moore stood by his thought that the team was good enough to make the playoffs, and they went on a really good run. And, you know, I think part of what helped that whole run was the fact that the Kauffman Stadium gave them a tremendous home field advantage. That place was so loud during the postseason. And the fact that the Oakland Athletics, that was the year where they went for it all and they traded Addison Russell and they acquired John Lester and Jason Hamill. And, you know, they gave up a lot
because
they thought this was going to be the year. Right. So then I don't want to say they collapsed, but down the stretch, they were terrible. Mm-hmm. And they barely snuck into the postseason. And the Royals hosted that wild card game. And the A's had a 7-3 lead in the eighth inning, and the Royals came back, tied it in the ninth, and then won it in the 12th.
Yeah, I think Andy McCullough wrote walk-up. A really great column on that for the KC Star, now that he's in L.A., but about what they were talking about in the clubhouse to get ready for that.
Yeah, it was an incredible game, and then that kind of catapulted the whole playoff run. I mean, they won their first 8 games, I believe, and I actually got a ring from the Royals for an American League Championship ring for that, and on it says American League record 8-0 because they won the wild card game. They swept the Angels in 3 games with 2 being on the road, and then they swept the Orioles, won the first 2 at Camden Yards, and then won the 2 at Kauffman Stadium, and then they ultimately lost to the Giants in the World Series. But just that whole experience of playoff baseball and the World Series is, you know, just looking back on it, I mean, at the time, I never really thought like I'm going to take this for granted because, you know, but it's one of those situations you look back and you're like, man, I'm pretty lucky and fortunate to have been in this situation. And a lot of those experiences I'll never forget. And it honestly made, I mean, I have very little to do with what happens on the field, but that's some of the best times that I've ever had. And I'm hopeful that I can experience more of that down the line. But 14 was great. It was a really fun season.
You know what I lament about those runs for the Royals is that they didn't have to go through the Yankees because the Yankees were kind of down then. And
sure.
So, like, it feels like every time the Twins get good again, the Yankees start getting good again. And it's just classic, like, so this is the year the Twins have one of their best rosters in a while. And, oh, by the way, the Yankees traded for Giancarlo Stanton. And so
right.
They've got Gleyber Torres that's close and Miguel Andujar that's close. I mean, you know, Greg Bird's not going to be healthy, but they thought they were going to have a full year out of him. And it's just funny how the Twins just can't seem to get out of the way of the Yankees. But that was just a brief aside. You're no stranger to radio. I heard you you had a program. I know Thad Levine was on the show the day you were on with I think it was Josh Wetzel. But what went into you filling in that day?
So one of the local stations actually I wouldn't even call it our flagship because we only have one station that our games are on here in town. But I go on there quite a bit. I talk hockey with the host. His name's Carl Falk. It's Fox Sports 1280 in town here. And anybody who wants to listen to the Red Wings, that's a free program that's available. Just go to foxsports1280.com and that'll take you to their website. That's also available on the iHeart app. Not to try to advertise here, but you can listen to Josh. You can listen to Josh Wetzel for free. It's not like MLB where you have to pay for MLB audio or anything like that. So, and Josh, if you've never listened to Josh, he is one of, if not the best in the league.
Pros pro,
he's so well prepared. He's so fun to work with, and I think we have a pretty good team here. But anyway, the host was going to be gone, and you know, he said he's been talking to me for about a year, and he said, you know, when I go on vacation or need a day off, would you be interested in hosting? And I said, sure. I'm not sure how many people want to listen to me, but if you think that it would be good, then great. And so when he asked me, I wanted to make sure that, you know, there's a lot of things going on. And so I was like, well, no one really wants to hear my opinion on stuff. Well, why not get some good guests? And so we talked about a bunch of different things, and people seemed to like it, and I didn't have to talk as much. So, but it's, I mean, the one thing, and I'll say this about you too, because I know you have to prepare for this, it's for people who do radio, a daily show or a daily podcast or anything like that. I always had respect for people like that, but to actually sit down and have to prepare a 3-hour show and be ready in case a guest doesn't show up, you have to fill that time.
Right.
I mean, so the preparation every day is incredible. Just a newfound respect for people that have to do that on a day-to-day basis.
So Rochester is a city, like, what would you compare it to size-wise in Minnesota? Because I've never been to Rochester. I plan to make a trip out there sometime. Maybe get my chance to meet Tony Schiavone.
That's right. You're a wrestling fan.
Yeah, big
they did a bobblehead for him last year.
I know, and he's got a podcast now where they watch old episodes of Nitro and like dub over it, like commentary and swear words and stuff. And he's got kind of a foul mouth, which I'm not surprised. But it's funny. I mean, as an old wrestling mark like I am, both meeting him but also listening to the podcast is good for my soul.
He's great. One of the guys in our office, Nick Shirata, who does corporate sales, they go out to some Italian restaurant every time that he's in town and get together and stuff. And he's a good dude.
So Rochester, though, I mean, is it like St. Cloud? Is it like Rochester here? Is it, I mean, size-wise and so on and so forth?
So it's the third largest, city in the state of New York, if you can believe that. Buffalo is second, and obviously New York City is number one.
Right.
So it used to be much, much larger. Kodak is the big company here that, you know, just given the digital age, jobs have disappeared from here. Their Frontier Communications, which I know is around Minnesota. My parents actually both work for Frontier.
Mm-hmm.
Their headquarters used to be here in Rochester. It's no longer. But it's still the third largest area in town. I would say third largest in the state. I would say that it's probably like a, I know it's not in Minnesota, but like a Fargo-Moorhead type.
That makes sense.
As far as population goes.
Yep.
Very similar. The one thing about here is there are so many colleges right in around Rochester. And so we, as far as filling intern spots, we have a lot of kids that are interested in coming to intern for us. So that helps in that regard. But yeah, Fargo-Moorhead's probably, that's what I would probably compare it to.
So how much do you keep up with players who are in Rochester and move on? For instance, Nico Goodrum, I think I saw he's going to make the Tigers, or at least he's positioned himself to make the Tigers. But how much do you keep up with guys like that? Not necessarily in person, but just what they're up to.
I try to keep on, if they're still playing, I just try to keep tabs on what's going on. You never really, you know, it's a little bit different because even when they move on, they're still a Red Wing alum. And so they may not be with the Twins, and obviously having success with the Twins would be great and ideal for both. But, you know, like JT Shagua is going to make the Dodgers bullpen.
Right. That's a big deal.
And John Ryan Murphy is going to make the Diamondbacks.
Yep.
John Hicks is going to make the Tigers. Nico Goodrum is going to make the Tigers. Sounds like Juan Centeno is going to make the Rangers.
Yeah, he'll back up there. Yep.
And so try to keep an eye on, you know, and Alex Meyer is hurt, but we try to keep an eye collectively. Josh will see things that I maybe don't see. I'll see things maybe that he doesn't see. I think that when the team goes on the road, I do, I guess, a more detailed job of trying to figure out, hey, how are these guys playing? When the team's at home, I'm kind of focused on what's going on here. But when the team goes on the road, my responsibilities obviously shrink. And with their no game, I have some more time on my hands. So I try to keep an eye on things. And, you know, I think that as the system gets healthier and healthier, and the system is certainly at a good point right now, and especially in regards to pitching,
yeah.
You know, we're going to see more guys that just because of the roster crunch that they're just not going to be able to stay in the organization because of the 40-man limit. So we'll start to see more. You know, the Yankees are a team that just gets hurt by the Rule 5 draft specifically, but they lose guys because they just don't have enough room for good players.
Like Jake Cave, who's going to probably play in the outfield for you guys regularly.
They like Jake Cave. I mean, it just came down to, all right, well, we have too many outfielders and we need a spot. So.
I mean, Clint Frazier can't even crack that outfield. If he can't,
exactly.
Then Jake
right.
Cave's got no chance.
So, but and Jake Cave's still a good player. I mean,
right.
You know, so I think that, you know, ideally most teams would like to strive that where you have too much talent, because if you have too much talent, that means not only is your major league team in a good spot, but your minor leagues are flourishing as well. And I think an underrated aspect of the minor leagues is, you know, winning is contagious. And if you don't win in the minor leagues, what makes you think that you're going to win when you get to the big leagues?
Mm-hmm.
And so the Twins have kind of had that mentality for a while now. But the teams the last several years, several championships in the organization. The Red Wings here, we've won 80 games the last 2 years, but we've missed the playoffs because we've had two of the best teams in the league in our own division. So, but I mean, the organization is healthy. They're winning games, and it's definitely more fun to come to the ballpark when the team's winning.
Yeah, for sure. So there's some rule changes in the minors this year, and obviously mound visits based on level is kind of different. I think is it fewer visits the higher up the ladder you get, and then there's
correct.
Also extra innings putting the runner on second base, which in the minors I don't love, but it's whatever. If they ever put it in the majors, though, I would hate that a lot. What are your kind of takeaways from all the rule changes you've seen so far that are going to start this year?
So the three changes that are the big changes, I don't even know if people will notice the third, but I'll talk about that one first. The pitch clock's been in the minor leagues, specifically AAA, AA, since 2015. And when they've made some tweaks to it based on feedback from people like myself or from people who actually run the actual clock. But when there wasn't a runner on base, there would be 20 seconds on the clock. If the pitcher was on the dirt around the mound and the batter got in the dirt circle around home plate, the 20 seconds would start. And then both had to be ready by the time there was 5 seconds on the clock. And that is going down from 20 to 15 seconds when there's nobody on base.
Wow.
And I think that's a significant change because a lot of times we would get close to that number anyway. That with 20 seconds to go, we would be getting pushing up close to that 5 seconds to go. So the batter has to be in the box and attentive to the pitcher, and the pitcher has to come set by 5 seconds. Otherwise, the umpire can assess a penalty. If it's the pitcher's fault, it's an automatic ball. If it's the batter's fault, it's an automatic strike. And so, you know, that timing to drop 5 seconds when it was only 20 to begin with is pretty significant.
Right.
And I and the reasoning for these rules is pace of play. And I think people kind of mix up length of game and pace of play because
mm-hmm.
they're two totally different things.
For sure.
When there's guys wandering around the mound and after every pitch and, you know, you got the shortstop coming in to grab some rosin and you got the first baseman coming in to grab some rosin or to kind of tap the pitcher on the backside. You know, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that it's been part of the game, but that's stuff that slows the game down. And at the end of the day, the players are smart enough to know, like, all right, well, my pitching coach has already been out here. My pitcher needs a little breather.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go to the mound, get some rosin, and try to, you know, give him some time to catch his breath. And so the mound visit thing is significant because one of those visits counts as one now, and you only get 6 in AAA. And so, you know, if a catcher gets crossed up, it's the same in the big leagues. If a catcher gets crossed up, he asks the umpire if he can go out there and have it not count. I believe in the major leagues that number has to be displayed all over on video boards.
Yep, that's accurate.
And in minor leagues, not every facility has the capability. So to display it so
to alter their pixels,
yes,
or whatever to show
correct
it. Yeah.
Correct. So we don't, not every place has a capability, so we don't have to, but the umpire has to indicate to the press box that this is number one, number two, so on and so forth. So
mm-hmm.
That'll be a change for sure. And then the third one is what you talked about, the runner on second base beginning in extra innings. That also, when we say extra innings, that counts in doubleheaders. So seven-inning games, if it's the eighth inning, which is extra innings in a doubleheader, the runner would be on second base for the eighth inning, not the tenth. So, you know, I think that has less to do with speeding up the game than it does to just trying to limit how many pitchers that teams have to use. Because, you know, when a major league team needs to call somebody up from the AAA club and they played 14, 15 innings the night before, they're significantly limited with who they can call up because of the number of pitchers that got thrown.
Right.
Yeah, so, So I think that has more to do with saving pitchers down here than it does anything. My fear with the whole thing is that it's every game is going to be played out the same. If the team in the top half scores a run, the team in the bottom half is going to play for one run. So we're going to see a lot of bunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody who listens to your podcast specifically or anyone who follows you on Twitter likes the bunt.
Nope.
And, you know, at the end of the day, there's guys here that are trying to develop. So there may be some managers who just say, you know what, to heck with it. We're not going to bunt. We're just, you know, you're more likely to score anyway with a runner on second, nobody out. Why give up an out?
Right.
And there's some new school managers who may think like that. And there may be some old school managers. I think that that's a real interesting, dynamic that has yet to be seen. But that's certainly gonna change some things. We played here in Rochester. We played 14 extra inning games last year total, and I think four or five of those at home. So not a really significant change for us, but it does change the game quite a bit.
Yeah, for sure. So what are you gonna do a Periscope to reveal the roster again? Because I kind of like that.
Yeah. So 2 years ago we did that, and last year there was like Zach Granite was injured to begin the season. And so they were still trying to figure out exactly what the roster was going to be. And like 2 years ago, I think we had one guy that needed to be placed on the DL. Whereas last year, I think we had three or four guys where they had to make decisions on them.
Sure.
If we get the roster, from the Twins in, enough time, like if we get it on like a Sunday, we certainly try to do something like that. It may not be, you know, walking around the clubhouse with their nameplates up and trying to give a little info on each player, but it may be something different where Josh and I just kind of sit down and talk about guys. And, you know, it all depends. And the Twins still have a lot of things that can happen. I mean, a lot can happen in a major league season in a week. So the fact that they open a week before we do, you know, the AAA club or the guys that are at the moment on the AAA squad down in spring training, they're still playing like inter-squad games and games against other teams in the league, and they'll keep playing. And then ultimately the Twins will need to make some sort of moves. I mean, I think it's unrealistic nowadays that a major league team goes an entire week without making a move, but maybe the off days help that.
Somehow last year they made it to like April 17th or 18th, which was 2 weeks, I think, which people were really surprised by. Then they ended up, I think, was Arcia designated? That was 2 years ago. Last year, I think Danny Santana got designated and a few other moves happened, but they were healthy for the most part for the first couple weeks.
And I think by and large for the season, they were healthy, which is certainly what helped their whole, you know, until Sano got hurt at the end, right?
But yeah, right.
For the most part, I mean, I think most teams think that they're good enough to compete if they could just stay healthy. And the Twins benefited from that last year. But you know, if the guys are needed, you know, they're not going to start here in AAA if they go up and they're with the Twins. So we'll see. Our roster could look drastically different in a week than it does, you know, today.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of names that people will be familiar with that are likely to start here if there are no moves in the big leagues. But I think that the likelihood of a move, at least one, needing to be made is probably pretty high.
So are you in Fort Myers right now, or where are you at calling us at this
time? I'm in Rochester.
Okay.
Yeah, it's much colder here than it is down there.
Did Josh, you get to go down there at all?
I did not.
Okay.
So what happens with my schedule specifically is, so I have so much work that is dictated for Media Guide, is dictated on kind of whatever happens with like the big league team. And so as spring training happens and, you know, we try to get some feedback from the coaching staff, that send it back. My Media Guide, I really don't ramp up stuff until I start to get a better idea of who's going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, I could start doing media guide bios in January, and we could have a bunch of those guys not show up here simply because trades or DFA or, you know, whatever it is. So once they start playing spring training games, we get a better idea of, you know, the 6-year free agent guys or the minor league free agent guys, you know, like Ryan Lamar. You know, I had anticipated him being here, and he had such a good spring that he's opening up with the big league club. And so, but you know, those are the kinds of things that my media guide really ramps up in March. And so to go down there, as much as I would like to, I would miss a lot of that prep for the media guide. And there's still a lot of people who rely on that information, that I put in the guide. So I try my best to get the guys that are likely to be here. And sometimes I swing and miss, and sometimes the whole 25 man opening day roster's in there, and ultimately that's what I shoot for. But yeah, it's a lot of work.
Well, we're running out of time here, but I got one quick thing before I let you go. Can you remember a time where your entire starting rotation was on the 40 man roster? Because that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, so I'm trying to think here. Not since I started working in baseball. No. Especially not here in Rochester. Gosh, their pitching depth is just incredible. I mean, you think about Fernando Romero and Steven Gonsalves and Zach Littell and Aaron Slagers and, you know, just all these guys that are likely to be here. Dietrich Enns, Adalberto Mejia, these kind of guys are all, you know, guys that are possibilities to be here. And there's just not enough spots for them all. So we'll see how they kind of divide those guys up. But you know, we'll have a good pitching staff. Double A will certainly have a good pitching staff again. And, you know, they won the title last year behind good pitching, and it looks like it's going to be strong again. But I think what happens is pitching is what gets taken first. I think we saw it last year. You know, the Twins set a record for number of pitchers. We set a record for number of pitchers. And if you can have pitching depth, you're going to win a lot of games because you're going to be in a lot of games if you don't give up a lot of runs.
Right.
So, you know, I think the AAA team and the double A team should be good again, as long as the major league team can stay healthy. And obviously that's the hope is that, and we're here to serve the big league team. So if the big league team's doing well, everybody's happy here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that pitching, they're certainly deep, but the system seems to be getting better and better, even with position players, as the years go on.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out from the busy day that you have to join us on Midwest Swing. And if people want to follow you on Twitter, it's NJ Rowan. Is that correct?
Yes, NJROWAN.
At Rock Red Wings. I don't know if you do those tweets, but obviously
I help out. I help out, and our social media guy, Tim Duhan, is great with that. He's one of the best in our leagues, for sure.
Got to do hashtag Rock the Vote this year for the the All-Star game. I'm going to bug you about it until you guys actually do it.
I like it.
Hey, so let's catch up again soon, and we'll talk about how your wings are doing here. Hopefully we can talk about some hot wings.
Yeah, that would be great. And hopefully the Twins are winning as well.
You got it. Hey, thanks for taking the time out. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.